नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय जन्माद्यस्य यतोन्मयादितरतष्ठते स्वभिज्ञस्वरात्
You are always saving us, thank you.
Janmadyasya yatonmayaditaratashtatishvapigyasvarat Tene brahmahridaya adakabaye muyanti yatsurayaha Tejo varimritam yatavinamayo yatratri sargomrisha Dhamna svena sadani rashtukuhakam satyam param dhimahi
I offer my obeisances unto Lord Sri Krishna, the son of Vasudev, who is the supreme all-pervading personality of Godhead. I meditate upon him, the transcendent reality, who is the primeval cause of all causes, from whom all manifested universes arise, in whom they dwell, and by whom they are destroyed. I meditate upon that eternally effulgent Lord who is directly and indirectly conscious of all manifestations and yet is beyond them. It is He only who first imparted Vedic knowledge unto the heart of Brahma, the first created being. Through him, this world, like a mirage, appears real even to great sages and demigods. Because of him, the material universes, created by the three modes of nature, appear to be factual, although they are unreal. I meditate, therefore, upon him, the absolute truth, who is eternally existence, in his eternal transcendental abode, and who is forever free of illusion. Are we reading? This is where we left off. In Vedic literatures, it is said that the Absolute Truth Personality of Godhead is the chief amongst all living personalities. All living beings, beginning from the first created being, Brahma, down to the smallest ant, are individual living beings. And above all, Brahma, there are even other living beings with individual capacities. And the personality of Godhead is also a similar living being. And he is an individual, as are the other living beings. But the Supreme Lord, or the Supreme Living Being, has the greatest intelligence. And he possesses supermost inconceivable energies of all different varieties. If a man's brain can produce a space satellite, one can very easily imagine how brains higher than man can produce similarly wonderful things which are far superior. The reasonable person will easily accept this argument. But there are stubborn atheists who would never agree. Srila Vyasadeva, however, at once accepts the Supreme Intelligence as the Parameshwar. He offers his respectful obeisances under the Supreme Intelligence addressed as the Para, or the Parameshwar, or the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And that Parameshwar is Sri Krishna, as admitted in Bhagavad Gita and other scriptures delivered by Sri Vyasadeva, and specifically in this Srimad Bhagavatam. In Bhagavad Gita, the Lord says that there is no other Paratattva Samam Bonam than Himself. Therefore, Sri Vyasadeva at once worships the Paratattva, Sri Krishna, whose transcendental activities are described in the 10th canto. Unscrupulous persons go immediately to the 10th canto, and especially to the 5 chapters which describe the Lord's rasa dance. This portion of the Srimad Bhagavatam is the most confidential part of this great literature. Unless one is thoroughly accomplished in the transcendental knowledge of the Lord, one is sure to misunderstand the Lord's worshipable transcendental pastimes called Ras Dance and his love affairs with the gopis. This subject matter is highly spiritual, and only the liberated persons who have gradually attained to the stage of Paramhamsa can transcendentally relish the rasa dance. Srila Vyasadeva, therefore, gives the reader the chance to gradually develop spiritual realization before actually relishing the essence of the pastimes of the Lord. Therefore, he purposely invokes a Gayatri mantra, Dhimahi. This Gayatri mantra is meant for spiritually advanced people. When one is successful in chanting the Gayatri mantra, he can enter into the transcendental position of the Lord. One must therefore acquire Brahminical qualities or be perfectly situated in the quality of goodness in order to chant the Gayatri mantra successfully, and then attain to the stage of transcendentally realizing the Lord, His name, His fame, His qualities, and so on. Srimad Bhagavatam is the narration of the Swarup of the Lord, manifested by His internal potency. And this potency is distinguished from the external potency which has manifested the cosmic world, which is within our experience. Srila Vyasadeva makes a clear distinction between the two in this sloka. Sri Vyasadeva says herein that the manifested internal potency is real, whereas the external manifested energy in the form of material existence is only temporary and illusory, like the mirage in the desert. In the desert mirage, there is no actual water. There is only the appearance of water. Real water is somewhere else. The manifested cosmic creation appears as reality. But reality, of which this is but a shadow, is in the spiritual world. Absolute truth is in the spiritual sky, not the material sky. In the material sky, everything is relative truth. That is to say, one truth depends on something else. This cosmic creation results from interaction of the 3 modes of nature, and the temporary manifestations are so created as to present an illusion of reality to the bewildered mind of the conditioned soul, who appears in so many species of life, including the higher demigods like Lord Brahma, Indra, Chandra, and so on. In actuality, There is no reality in the manifested world. There appears to be reality, however, because of the true reality which exists in the spiritual world, where the personality of Godhead eternally exists with his transcendental paraphernalia. Om Gyanti Mirandasya Jnananjana Chalakaya Chakshurun Militam Jena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prishtaya Bhutale Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swami Nitti Namine Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Sunyavari Bhastatya Deshatharine Vanshakalpatarubhyascha Kripasindubhya evacha Patithanam bhavanibhyo Vaishnavebhyo namo namaha Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Srivasadi Gaura Bhaktavrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna Rama Hari Rama, Rama Rama Hari Hari. Hare Krishna. I am very grateful to be back with all of you. Thank you for each giving your lives in sincere devotional service. Assisting Srila Prabhupada in his mission of compassion. On behalf of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, to spread the teachings of Srimad Bhagavatam to the world. Srila Prabhupada told us that Lord Chaitanya is the personification of the teachings of Srimad Bhagavatam, the crest jewel of all Vedic literatures. We read how Sri Vyasadeva while sitting in his Badrika Ashram on banks of Saraswati River was reflecting. He had compiled the Rig Veda, Yajur Veda, Sama Veda, Atharva Veda, Upanishads, Itihastas, Samhitas, Puranas, Mahabharata. Still, he was feeling an emptiness. That emptiness was his compassion as literary incarnation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He was compiling these Vedic literatures to uplift human society. It was then that Narada Muni instructed him that you will not find full satisfaction in your service until you directly describe the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna. Until you write this Vedic literature that exclusively discusses the highest perfection of life. Unmotivated, uninterrupted, loving service to the Lord. It was this, with this instruction, that Vyasadeva compiled his own commentary of the Brahma Sutra, which is the summary of all Vedic knowledge, in the form of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Savai pung sang paro dharmo yato bhaktir dhokshuche ahoy tiki aprati hataya yatma suprasinati. In this verse that is so commonly quoted by Srila Prabhupada and all of our great Vaishnava acharyas, there is an encapsulation of the very highest perfection of life. The perfection, the supreme dharma, is that which awakens loving devotional service to the Supreme Lord. Such devotion must be unmotivated and uninterrupted to fully satisfy the self. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he taught Srimad Bhagavatam, he lived Srimad Bhagavatam as an example to us. Krishna himself descends to teach us by his own example. In the introduction to Srimad Bhagavatam, Srila Prabhupada very carefully gives a brief summary of the life and teachings of Lord Chaitanya. For this very reason, because he's teaching us how to read the Srimad Bhagavatam and how to apply it to our life through himself and his devotees. Today we are reading the first verse or sloka of this Paramahamsa Samhita. Srimad Bhagavatam is especially meant to be relished by the category of self-realized souls called Paramahamsa, which means fully self-realized, which means one who's seeing the essence everywhere and taking the essence everywhere. The 10th canto, as described here in this beautiful purport, is describing the supreme absolute truth, the cause of all causes, the personality of Godhead, how he's living in his eternal abode, and how when he comes to this world, this once in a day of Brahma, the spiritual world descends with him, and he performs these transcendental activities of the highest love to attract our hearts. Within the 10th canto, these five chapters which describe Rasa Lila is most intimate, highest revelation of the absolute truth. There's not a trace of material inebriety. There's not a particle of material misconception within the hearts of Krishna and gopis. The gopis are the highest, most self-realized souls in the most profound state of love for the absolute truth. And in reciprocation of that love, they dance. Because it seems so much like the way people dance in this material world, it is so often misconceived. What is the Rasa Lila? the acharyas are telling, this Srivyas has scientifically, systematically, philosophically approached the Rasa Leela in such a way that we cannot really understand it unless we begin from the first verse of the Srimad Bhagavatam, understand, live by, and realize the first 9.5 cantos. So we are on our journey beginning with the first verse today. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur explained every single line of every single verse of Srimad Bhagavatam is pure nectar, which is revealing Krishna. For self-realized souls, every verse is revealing Krishna directly. In these verses today, we're reading about in the beginning of creation, Lord Brahma is born. It is described in more detail in later verses of Srimad Bhagavatam, how creation takes place. In the secondary level of creation, Lord Garbhodakshayi Vishnu, an expansion of Karanodakshayi Vishnu, is laying in the causal ocean. From his navel comes the lotus flower, and Brahma is born. He's the Atmabhu. He's born in such an extraordinary way, directly from God himself. And he's the only living being within the universe. Mahavishnu has already glanced upon material energy, the Mahatattva, and impregnated it. Or let us say, like Father, through his glance, he impregnates all living beings within Mother Nature or Prakriti. Sarva yoni shakondiya murdaya sambhavantiya tasam brahma mahajonir aham bija pratapita. Bhagavad Gita, Krishna tells all living beings are coming from the same source, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He is the seed giving Father of everyone. But for creation, he especially deputes Lord Brahma. But he's bewildered. He doesn't know where he is. He does not know who he is. He does not know where he's supposed to go or what he's supposed to do. He's all alone on this giant lotus flower, and he's looking around, and he's just seeing this ocean all around him, massive ocean. He's fully aware. He's not like a little infant baby that doesn't know what's going on. He's a fully developed, intelligent person who doesn't know what's going on. And he's looking around. He starts exploring, climbing down the stem of the lotus. And he sees all the waves crashing. And he climbs back up. And he realizes he's totally helpless. Nothing he can do. And in that totally humbled state, he hears these syllables, tapa, that he's supposed to perform tapasya. Ishvara sarva bhutanam hriday sharchana tishtati. The Lord is in the heart of every living being. Within the heart of Brahma, he gives him the intelligence to meditate. And the Lord reveals himself, instructs him who he is, instructs them in the not only how to create the universe, but the very purpose of the universe. What it's for. It's for self-realization. There's a description in another section of Srimad Bhagavatam where when Brahma has his night, so much of the of his creation, he's kind of destroyed. When he goes to sleep, nothing's happening. And then when he wakes up, he sees what's going on and he's bewildered again. And the Lord has to keep helping him. And Lord Brahma, he understands not that he's the supreme living being among all living beings within the universe. He's the father of everyone. Such an exalted position. He's just seeing how people suffer so much. What is the purpose of all of this? And therefore, along with the creation, Lord Vishnu empowers Brahma with knowledge of Vedas, which describes how creation works and why it works. Tukalayam ashashvatam. Abramabhuvanaloka punaravartunorjanam amupecha tukontya punar janmana vidyate. Krishna tells in Gita, from the highest planet, Brahmaloka, where Brahma is living 311 trillion years, he never gets sick. He doesn't grow old. He's in his full youth from his birth to 311 trillion years later. He could see everywhere. And when his time is finished, if he utilizes his time properly, he goes back home, back to Godhead. If not, he has to go through various species of life. So Brahma, such an exalted person, but is totally humbled because he understands that whatever he has, whatever he could do, is all by the mercy of Krishna, who is infinitely more intelligent and infinitely more powerful than him. Recently, I was with a scientist, specifically in the field of technology. Wonderful man. He was one of the first person to invent the memory chip. That's something that either that or a particular evolutional, a particular version of that updated is in practically every computer and every cellular phone and all of those things. It's just a small little thing. And it helps to really activate the purposes of and make the cell phone do what it does and the computers. And I happened to be with him at Govardhan Hill in Vrindavan. And we did parikrama. And we had Harikatha discussing Krishna and Indra and the lifting of Govardhan Hill.
And we were sitting together, just the two of us. And I was inquiring, because I don't even know what a memory chip is. And he was explaining the whole science to me of, you know, the silicon boards made out of this element and how, you know, the different circuits and how they... And he was explaining the most advanced technology of computers with the same common sense and simplicity that you or me could explain how a bicycle works. You know, there's the pedal and then there's a chain. For him, it's as simple as that. Because he knows. It was really incredible. He was saying it in such just common sense. This is how it works and this is how it works. And it was so just grassroots mechanical. And I couldn't understand a word of it. It all made total sense to me, but I couldn't understand. Because he knows. And therefore, because he knows, he can understand it and explain it with such ease. Whereas for most of us, we would have to go to college and get master's degrees and get PhDs and then, you know, be in research for 20 years before we could really grasp it. And he's just a little jiva who somehow or other has understood this particular aspect of material creation. What is Brahma in comparison to him or to any scientist? Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he told Rupa Goswami that I am going to explain to you the science of devotional service bhakti and the loving mellows between Krishna and his devotees. This science is like an ocean, a limitless ocean. And the most I can explain to you is the content within one drop of that ocean. But the drop from that ocean can completely inundate with a flood the entire universal creation. One drop from the ocean. That's achintya. It's inconceivable. In the last chapter of Srimad Bhagavatam we've been reading here in New Dwarka, it was Srila Prabhupada's offering of his last purports to the world, personally and directly, while he was living in Vrindavan during his last weeks. He was reciting the translations and commentaries of the Brahma Vimohan Lila. And in the Krishna book, Srila Prabhupada describes it in its entirety with Brahma's prayers. Brahma himself, who his awareness of the realities of this creation is billions and trillions of times beyond what a scientist or a human being can possibly fathom. And he's confessing to Krishna that I'm like a little firefly. Fireflies at night, they give out light. Just kind of goes on for a couple seconds and then goes off. And then they kind of recharge. And then they go off again. And the firefly with his little eyes, or her little, his little eyes actually. He really thinks he's illuminating the world, because from where he is, all directions are fully illuminated. But when we're sitting down, we see that that firefly is just, his light only extends at the most a couple feet to give light. Otherwise, you just see it there in its location, a little light going. Brahma compares himself to a firefly. He said, all my knowledge, all my abilities, in darkness, in ignorance, I'm thinking I'm the doer and how much I'm doing. But when I'm in your presence, Krishna, it's like a firefly in the presence of the sun at noon. At night, the firefly really thinks he's giving off light. But at noon, on a cloudless day, when the sun is at its peak, this firefly can be with all his might. And there's not anyone in creation, no one who even notices him. Because his light is simply insignificant. Brahma is feeling like that. In your presence, I am totally insignificant. This entire material creation under the three modes of material nature, activated by time, is Maya, or the illusory energy. It's all being supervised by Maya, Yakshena Prakriti Suyate Sacharachara. And Krishna is the controller of Maya. It's his external energy. And that Maya is so deceptive, subtle, gross, on every level, trapping people into thinking that which is not. Srila Prabhupada defined Maya as that which is not. It means what we're seeing is not what we're actually seeing. What we're hearing is not what we're actually hearing. Our Vaishnava Acharyas have described that the material world, being Krishna's creation, Om Purnam Adha Purnam Idam, it's perfect and complete like Krishna. It is not that the material world is false. What is false is that we're not seeing material creation in relationship to Krishna. Bhoktaram jagatapasam sarvalokamaheshwaram suhridam sarvabhutanam gyatvamam shantim richchati. When we simply understand that everything is Krishna's property, that Krishna is the ultimate supreme enjoyer of everything, and that Krishna is the most intimate, loving, well-wishing friend of everyone. Jivera Swarupoi Krishnera Nityadas. We realize we're eternally the servant of Krishna. We're eternally subordinate to Krishna. As Srila Prabhupada's explaining in this beautiful verse, we are all individuals eternally. Nityo nityanam chaitanas chaitananam eko bahunam yoga dadati kaman. There is one supreme eternal. And there are limitless other little eternals who are all completely dependent upon and subordinate to this one supreme eternal. Mamayvam so jiva loke jiva bhuta sanatana. All living beings, Krishna said, are eternally my part and parcels. This is inconceivable. Being a part and parcel of Krishna is the most exalted, incredible thing that we can ever imagine. Krishna explains Lord Chaitanya told Rupa Goswami, a little part of a drop from the ocean of devotional service, that drop could flood the entire cosmic manifestation. And similarly, a tiny little ray, a single part and parcel of Krishna, has inconceivable, unbelievable powers. Why? Because we're part of Krishna. In our pure state, when we read about these devotees who are the eternal servants of Krishna, the gopas and the gopis in Vrindavan, what is their incredible nature? If we understand how great Krishna is, we can appreciate how great every part and parcel of Krishna is in our pure, liberated condition. Because Krishna, the supreme, all-powerful, all-great creator, maintainer, annihilator of all material existence, is Rasa Vihari. He agrees through his great happiness to be conquered by the love of each and every one of his parts and parcels who choose to serve him with love. When Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu begins his teaching to Sanatana Goswami, Jivera Swarupoi Krishnera Nitya Das, he's speaking of the most incredible, inconceivable, exalted position. What does it mean to be an eternal servant of Krishna? It means to be such a vessel of Krishna's infinite love through his Sri Radharani Shakti of Prem can manifest through us as his little part and parcels, where the absolute controller of all controllers, Parameshwar, is subordinate to that love. That's what it means to be a servant of Krishna. But a servant of Krishna never wants to control Krishna. Sarva dharman parityaja mam ekam sharanam praja. An eternal servant of Krishna simply wants to surrender to Krishna's will. Lord Brahma, in his most exalted level of consciousness, science, technology, physical power, influence, wealth, with all of the opulences of Brahma, when Krishna manifested all the little calves and cowherd boys that he had kidnapped, and he couldn't understand, how is this happening to me? And then when Krishna manifested each one of these little calves and gopas as Vishnu forms, he was stunned. He was speechless. And then Krishna wound it all up and he's a little cowherd boy again, standing there with a lump of dahi, yogurt, in his hand with some fruit. Prabhupada says fruit salad. And he was holding that yogurt and the fruit salad a year before. Can you imagine sitting there? It was still fresh. And he's looking very innocently like, where are my friends? Where are my calves? And then Brahma surrenders that this little boy Krishna is the absolute truth. He is Parameshwar. Whatever I know, whatever I have, is by his grace. Whatever I am and whatever I know is infinitesimal like a little firefly in front of the sun. And with total humility, Brahma submits himself, surrenders his heart to little Gopal. And at that point, he looks around and he sees the same things he was seeing with his eight eyes before, but with a completely different perception. He sees Vrindavan. He was watching Vrindavan for so many days. A whole year he was checking to, you know, he saw when Krishna was playing with his friends, he stole his friends. Now he's looking at Vrindavan, he's saying the same tree he was seeing as a tree, he's seeing as a kalpa vriksha. The same grass and soil he was just seeing as grass and soil that he thought he created, he's seeing it as Chintamani Dham. The same little cows, which he also thought was his creation, grazing, how many cows Brahma sees, he's seeing them as Surabhi cows, Kamadenus. He's seeing the spiritual world of Vrindavan. What's the difference between a few minutes before and this particular moment? He has the same eyes. He's seeing the same places. But because he has surrendered, a whole reality is being revealed to him. Everything we see, everything we experience is relative and subjective to our particular state of consciousness. With our little imperfect senses and our little tiny imperfect minds and intelligences, what can we really understand about the infinite universe and creation? Even Brahma can't understand it. And he's the one who's kind of, he's orchestrating it. But it's happening through him. And he thinks he knows what he's doing. But just like that scientist I was speaking to at Govardhan Hill, he's won so many awards for his breakthroughs in technology. He was explaining, you know, whatever I know, he said, it's such an infinitesimal little fraction of what's there. You know, what is the energy within an atomic particle? No matter how many years of the evolution of science, we'll never understand even a particular atom's full potency. We're just scratching the surface with whatever we're doing. It's limitless. Every particle of Krishna's material energy is inconceivable and limitless if we perceive it from the perspective of Krishna. It's fascinating. Now Brahma is seeing something that he thought he created, this little tract of land in what we call Uttar Pradesh now. He's saying, you know, he was the creator of the earth planet and everything on the earth planet, and now he's seeing something infinitely beyond him. He's seeing the cows and the calves and the cowherd boys for what they really are. Eternally liberated, self-realized residents of the Paravyoma, the spiritual world. And he didn't come to that realization because he's the creator. He didn't come to that realization because he's Brahma. He came to that realization because he humbled himself and surrendered. Daivihesu gunamayi mama maya duratye ya mame vame papatyante maya metha durantite. The mirages that are described in this first verse of Srimad Bhagavatam, due to the illusory potency of the Lord, we cannot cross beyond them. They're so beyond us, so beyond even our most developed state of material intelligence abilities, so beyond the reach of our tapasya. Srimad Bhagavatam simply teaches us how to take shelter with faith in the path of devotional service or bhakti. Because through the path of bhakti, Krishna's pleased. Sam siddhyata hari toshino. And then Krishna reveals everything that is meant to be known. Tadvedi pranipatena pariprashnena sevaya upadekshanti te jnanam jnaninas tattva darshana. Krishna tells in Gita, just try to know the truth. By approaching a spiritual master, inquire submissively, render service. Self-realized soul can impart knowledge unto you because it has seen the truth. Evam parampara praptam. This is parampara. And it begins here with Brahma. His exalted position, his long life, his intelligence, his abilities, but still he's following the same principle. And he's teaching Narada. And we see here, even Srila Vyasadeva, who has composed all these Vedic literatures, the most advanced, inclusive, realized literatures in history. Even he's submitting to his Guru Narada Muni. Please instruct me. And Madhvacharya walked bare feet because he understood the importance of getting this connection in Parampara. He walked all the way from South India, Udupi, to Adi Badri. All the way to Badrinath. How many have been to Badrinath? Please raise hand. You can only go there a few months a year. Because from October till about May, it's covered with snow and no human being can possibly reach it. That's just the lower Badri, where the deity of Badri Vishal is residing. And Madhvacharya was praying alone in the deity room of Badri Vishal, please give me the audience of Vyasadeva and Adi Badri, which is way, way high in the Himalayas where people cannot go. And when he got the blessings, he started walking. One of his disciples was coming with him. He said, you'll not make it. And his disciples, no, I'm coming with you. I can't leave you alone. You have to have an assistant. So they're walking together, and Madhvacharya is climbing these peaks of Himalayan mountains and the snow. And he's the son of Vayu, so he can go fast. And his disciple just kind of fell down in total exhaustion. He couldn't go any further, and Madhvacharya just went like that with his cloth. And suddenly this disciple found himself back in the temple, you know, hundreds of miles with the other devotees. He said, I couldn't keep up with him. So he went all the way to this Adi Badri by foot to sit at the feet of Vyasadeva to make that connection. And he surrendered. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself, he told Prakashananda Saraswati, that my guru called me a fool. Because I'm a fool. Before the guru, one thinks oneself a fool. Before the Vedic literatures, before the deity, we humble ourselves. Then we can actually open our hearts to receive the truth. It's in taking shelter. Sanatan Goswami, he said same thing to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. I'm a fool. I don't know. Who am I? Why am I suffering? In a practical way. We can say we know. We can quote so many scriptures. We can quote so much logic. We can scientifically explain things. But how much do we really know? Because knowledge is meant to liberate us from illusion. Knowledge is meant to awaken ecstatic love for Krishna in our hearts. And the great acharyas teach us the more you know Krishna and the more you love Krishna, the more you're totally humbled. This is Srimad Bhagavatam. We read in these pages stories of the Pandavas, of Kunti Devi. We read about such great personalities as Narada, Vyas, Kardama Muni, Kapila Dev, Dhruva Maharaj, the Prachetas. We read about Prahlad Maharaj, Priyavrat, Rishabdev, Bharat Maharaj. We read about Gajendra. He was so strong. He was so influential. We read about Ambarish Maharaj. We read about Ramchandra and Hanuman, Ranti Dev. So many incredible stories in the Srimad Bhagavatam. And they're all stories of how the Lord incarnates to protect the devotees. And every one of these devotees we've talked, we've just listed, and so many more, they all have this common quality. Jivara Swarupoi Krishna Rinityadas. I'm eternally a servant of Krishna. They're all fully taking shelter of the Lord. And they're all receiving the Lord's mercy, even after passing through so many difficulties and so many tests. They never give up their faith. They never give up their service. They never give up their well-wishing, compassionate nature. It's these qualities we have to learn to apply to our life before we could truly understand what is the Rasa Leela. Because Krishna's pastimes with his loving devotees, the gopis, is above and beyond all the other great souls of the Srimad Bhagavatam. And this is so beautiful. Because when we appreciate the exalted position of such great souls, when we appreciate the exalted position of Vrindavan, the residents of Vrindavan, the gopis of Vrindavan, when we appreciate the exalted position of those who are trying to teach us about these things and the message that they carry, then we become receptive to be purified. And as we become purified, Krishna reveals himself. Like to Brahma, after he totally humbled himself before Krishna and surrendered, Vrindavan was revealed. Thank you. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.